Art of Molecule Podcast.
Engineering Life and Us.
So, Michel, this is our very first podcast. That is exciting, isn't it? How did it all start, our project, L and Us? That was more than a year ago in Locarno, right?
August a year.
Exactly. Yeah. The Locarno Film Festival.
Exactly.
You were there being a guest at a talk.
Yeah, I did a talk with Maya Rochas, mm-hmm. an artist talk. And then we met at dinner.
Yes, which was wonderful.
Which was actually great. I was very afraid because you never know who you sit next to and what's going to happen.
Yes.
And we met and mm-hmm. somehow exchanged cards. And I said, oh, well, that sounds fascinating because I, as you know, I'm extremely interested in AI and in anything connected to future life and, mm-hmm. and life as we perceive it.
That's right.
But when we met, I thought, oh, well, that's a nice meeting. I did not expect to hear from you in 24 hours.
Right.
And I arrived in Zurich and here you are. And 2 days later, we met at the same table as we are sitting now.
We didn't lose any time, right?
No.
In Locarno, you were invited to give a talk during the La Mobilière talks.
Exactly.
And we were there the next day, which was very exciting for us, of course, being scientists and ethicists in front of this very cineastic, international, chic audience. What impressed me, because I was sitting in your talk session, was that you kind of did not really want to talk about too much about your past as being this superstar photographer. You wanted to look ahead and talk about landscape arts and environmental projects that you're involved in.
You know, most of my contemporaries that shared my past, mm-hmm. very strange, they do one retrospective after another. They keep showing their old work, they do one exhibition after the other, and when I had one or two very large exhibitions, and I said, you know what, the next one should be when I'm not around anymore, mm-hmm. because the future is now. The what happened in our industry, the way we knew it, was so extraordinary during this incredible period of time. And I think that's why everybody's re-showing that work to show how it was. And incidentally, there's just one man that I'm extremely close to from all these years, that was always ahead of its time, and his name is John Jay. And I met him in 1979-80, and he was already 20 years ahead, and he started the Gap campaign at the time, and then he went over to Nike, and we collaborated a lot with Nike at the time, and now he's in Asia, but basically, he never looked back. He said, you know, the past is the past, but the future is now. And I also another man that influenced me greatly, his name was Alexander Lieberman. He ran all of Condé Nast, and he was, when I met him in his 70s, and he was a great mentor of mine, and he's a great contemporary artist, but he took care of all of Condé Nast. But he was like a young boy. He was a 70-year-old young boy and never talked what he did before. Mm-hmm. It was always now and the future. And I feel, you know, we have many, many people end up in a wrong profession. because by education, by parenting, and by not given the possibility to choose. And I had a great life in the last years, and at one point I said 9 years ago, I want to start a new life, and I had the choice. And many people, they maybe don't have, or they don't think that they have a choice to really do what they want. And this is really fascinate me at engineering life. When I visited Basel the first time, the incredible passion in those, like I call them young scientists, or the notes that I find on glass windows with fuck you or this or, I mean,
not only.
No, but many
you're right,
frustrations in words and drawings. And, you know, I had the incredible luxury to assist a lot of talks of Stephen Hawking. And when I entered Basel, thanks to you the first time, and I skipped our two meetings at the Kronenhalle, but when I entered that world, I very quickly started understanding that the main focus is research. Now, can we use that research right away, or what are our limitations, or what are the limitations that are imposed by us, by legalities and by legal frontiers? And, you know, I spent a lot of time in China, and I feel America today is the old country. They're living on the dark side of the moon. And for good and for bad, China created, as you know, an incredible group of scientists. And, you know, the scientists that I met in Los Angeles that were really brilliant, they were mostly Chinese. And the Chinese that were imported before the Trump administration, that basically 90% had to leave the United States with the new restrictions. So, but this incredible passion that you feel when you enter the engineering life complex in Basel really fascinated me to an incredible extent.
When I called you right after Locarno, you said it was almost like 24 hours after that, and I think you're about right.
Yeah. It was a day, maximum 2 days after.
Yeah, what was your first reaction? What did you think? Crazy scientists calling me, what am I supposed to do? Or
no, because I, as I told you, I was obsessed. I'm obsessed by the quantum theory. I'm obsessed with what SpaceX is doing. I'm obsessed with robotics, because I have an artificial limb, and I had robotics help me with my own structure. And I think we will, with the restrictions we have, we will be able, even me, will be able to extend our life by 10 years, 15 years, maybe 20 years in my lifetime, by if we have the courage to collaborate with people like you. And I think the thing that really fascinated about your question was There is no such thing as a stupid idea or collaborating with some kind of institutions like SpaceX or with Elon Musk or going to lectures of Stephen Hawking, because all these things, they open your horizons, you know, and I feel I'm very connected to the great past, to, you know, I'm working on the Syria border, mm-hmm. on a project that connects the Mesopotamian Empire to contemporary art right now, and I just shared a couple of, a glimpse in what we're planning there, so, and your first suggestion was to show this in one of the most ancient, very, very questionable institutions right now, but also one of the most powerful
in
the institutions, and one of the institutions that we always wonder how we could survive through the dark times mm-hmm. and emerge so strong with now such an incredible Pope we have now after the last Pope that was abdicating his throne basically and leaving the Vatican. So, mm-hmm. I think it's an incredible context, and I think the context is very, very interesting because they are relying, the Vatican has lived off the past, and the past has bounced a lot in their face. Mm-hmm. And I think they now understand especially the Pope right now, that they need to embrace the present, they need to listen to their flock mm-hmm. and really think, who is our next flock? Because this flock they have now is going to vanish, you know, mm-hmm. but it's a new generation. How can the church survive?
So maybe I should explain this briefly. The project that we're working on together, L and Us, that's what it's called, the title. It's going to be a video projection or production.
Multimedia installation,
okay. And we plan to premiere it in the Vatican next year in 2021 during a conference, an international conference, the first actually that our NCCR, Molecular Systems Engineering, organizes in Rome, in the Vatican, about the ethics of engineering life. And that's where we want to have the premiere of your artwork there. So that is quite a strange context, as you just mentioned. This science approach on the one side, then your project, and then the old ancient Vatican in there. But that's also very fascinating. Yeah.
Especially nice to do, to combine this this new technology with paintings of Leonardo and of Michelangelo. Leonardo that did the first face drawings, did the first drawings of movement, you know? I mean, you look at the sketches of Leonardo, they are the first one, they were dissecting limbs, how we function. The first, basically, he was the Muybridge of time. And so I think the place is actually the right place because I think it will open a lot of people's eyes. People will be extremely surprised because the installation will be very futuristic, but it will also have a connectability to space, to light, to the visual arts. It's an art installation. It's really a connection of how, where are we coming from, but where are we going in the next 50 years. You know, incidentally, we were able, until about 15 years ago, we had a pretty accurate prediction of the future by 50 years. It's the first time in history that we cannot foresee the future for more than maximum 15 years right now, because technology is so incredibly fast that we cannot keep up with the new reality. So I think already since we met, the technology that we're going to use has improved so incredibly that we will be able to afford to do projections in many places in Rome at the same time. So a lot of people in the city of Rome are going to be able to assist to this performance. So but this is the luxury of technology. And ER, the way I'm learning from visiting your laboratories, is a very fast-moving subject that is again based on many ancient theories, molecular theories, and on very basic biology. EL will be more and more connected.
Engineering life.
Yes, to the subjects.
Molecular systems engineering, of course, is a rather new research, and it's highly complicated and complex with a lot of disciplines involved. It's not just chemistry; it's biology and nanoscience and so on. That, I suppose, was quite challenging for you, because you know, this is a complete new field that you're entering and that you're being asked to do some interpretation, artistic interpretation. How do you as an artist approach this?
I think you have to approach everything with an innocent eye. I think that's the most important, because the study of molecular biology or engineering life is so complex that I would need to spend my last 20 years or my last 15 years to have a basic understanding. But you have a team that has very gracefully opened the door, and in very simple terms tried to explain to me what is happening, and they were incredibly strangely open-minded to these aliens that are coming in. They're aliens to me as well, but I think when you put two aliens together, it's almost like math. Minus minus is plus, and plus is plus. So I think it's sort of a great connectability, and there was no barrier that you implied on us. I said, basically, as long as you don't talk bad about us, which...
which we don't.
That I don't talk bad about you, or I don't, I'm not overly critical, but you didn't even mention that. But I'm still wrapping my head around how everything is going to look the same way as I did when I went to Haran on the Syrian border. And it took me really about a year there to have a basic understanding of the area. And it's now almost a year that we met, and for the first time I shared some of my thoughts with you last time of the basic understanding and of the monumentality that I see the project, and that we will be able to project it eventually onto big buildings, into museums, and on computers, giving it to students to be inspired, and maybe other artists to collaborate. It should be like any project, should be a motivator for everything, that we need to have basic understanding and not this kind of fear, because everybody talk about AI or ER, they're afraid that the robot's going to take over, that we're going to be controlled by a machine. But if you ask to any of the scientists at Caltech, or any of the, you listen to the great interviews, and even people like Zuckerberg or Bill Gates or Elon Musk, I think we are still a stretch away. We are able to do a robotic soldier that's going to be able to shoot the gun, but that needs to be operated by us still. It needs to be controlled by us. That computer can take over, we are still in a position to stop.
Art of Molecule Podcast.
Engineering Life and Us.